Hello and welcome to The Top Story, a podcast with the headlines of the day from our correspondents around the world. I'm Tian Lu, coming up in this edition. The international community is calling for restraint as Israeli war cabinet ministers are split on the details of possible retaliation against Iran for its attacks. More than 14,000 dead and 8 million displaced. We'll look at the conflict in Sudan 1 year on. And German Chancellor Olaf Scholz is in Shanghai on the second stop of his China visit to boost bilateral trade cooperation. We begin with the Middle East. The Israeli military says it has now lifted all restrictions put in place shortly before Iran's drone and missile attacks. Those include a ban on all educational activities and large outdoor gatherings. After hours of discussion on Sunday, Israeli officials say the country's war cabinet favors retaliation against Iran, but is divided over the timing and scale. Meanwhile, tensions are rising along Israel's border with Lebanon, and the situation in Gaza is becoming more dire. Sam Menick with the Associated Press reports from Jerusalem.
Israel has hailed Saturday night's defense as a success. There was some minor damage on a military base in the south of Israel, and a seven-year-old girl was injured, likely due to shrapnel. The United States has urged Israel to look at this as a win. Israel's war cabinet met for hours on Sunday to discuss the situation. One of the war cabinet ministers, Benny Gantz, said that the situation, however, was not over.
This incident is not over. The strategic alliance and regional cooperation system that we built and stood its significant test needs to be strengthened right now. Israel proved yesterday that it is an anchor of military and technological power and an anchor of security in the Middle East.
In addition to people looking to Israel to see what they're going to do next, tensions are escalating along the northern border with Lebanon, where the militant group Hezbollah operates. On Sunday, Israel said that its fighter jets struck a weapons manufacturing site deep inside Lebanon, and they said that they did this in retaliation for strikes overnight from Lebanon. Now, while all the attention has been on the regional situation in the last few days, the situation in Gaza is becoming more and more dire, and people in the southern city of Rafah are getting extremely frustrated. They are bracing for this imminent attack that Israel says it is going to conduct on Rafah in order to get rid of the last few Hamas brigades. But a ceasefire deal seems to be a long ways off. On Sunday, Hamas said it rejected the latest proposal put to it. It said that it was demanding that Israel give it written confirmation that it was going to withdraw all of its troops from Gaza during the second phase of this deal. Hamas says, too, that it wants to increase the number of Palestinian prisoners and that, in general, it wants an end to this war. So far, this is something that Israel has not agreed to.
That was AP correspondent Sam Menick. Iran is witnessing a wide range of reactions to its strikes on Israel, from celebrations to worries about how an escalation may affect the country's economy. Ehsan Kavani has more from Tehran.
Pro-government citizens are really proud, as we saw many cities across the country. There were celebrations in the streets with fireworks and so on. These people believe that the harsher Iran's reaction, the better.
Iran is a strong and independent country. We do not allow anyone to infringe upon our territory. Besides, any enemy that plans to invade Iran will suffer like Israel did.
On the other hand, many people fear the economic consequences of a possible war. Since Saturday evening, the Iranian national currency, rial, has lost some 5% of its value against the US dollar. A possible reaction from Israel could further devalue rial, and that means people will face higher inflation rates than the current 40%. There are also a group of people in their 40s and even older who remember the 8-year war with Iraq. They say the worst thing about war is insecurity and fear. Of course, the foreign minister said that Iran did not hit civilian targets in Israel, and a possible counterattack by Israel would probably focus on Iran's nuclear facilities. But some people are scared, as all flights were canceled in Tehran's both domestic and international airports on Sunday. Iranians, both pro-government and the cities, critics of the government here, believe that without the U.S. support, Israel will not attack Iran.
That was Ehsan Kavani reporting. China has urged restraint and efforts to avoid further escalation of the situation in the Middle East. A foreign ministry spokesperson was responding to a question of a possible Israeli retaliation on Iran following attacks from Iran over the weekend. The United Nations Security Council has held an emergency meeting after Tehran launched drone and missile strikes on Israel over the bombing of the Iranian consulate in Syria. Jibing, with China's permanent mission to the UN, said China is concerned over the spillover effects caused by the prolonged conflict in the region.
China urges all parties involved to exercise maximum restraint and calmness, resolve differences and disputes in accordance with the UN Charter and international law, and avoid further escalation.
China emphasized a two-state solution and reiterated that the immediate priority is a ceasefire in Gaza. Iran launched a retaliatory attack against Israel this past weekend for the bombing of its consulate in Syria on April the 1st. Tehran says about half of its strikes hit targets, while Israel claims that it intercepted 99% of the drones and missiles. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres also spoke against further hostilities, while other members of the Security Council expressed their different opinions on the matter. Jody Jacobs has more from New York.
It's deemed an extraordinary meeting when the Security Council gathers on a Sunday, and that's exactly what took place here in New York at the request of Israel.
This attack crossed every red line, and Israel reserves the legal right to retaliate.
These countries, especially the United States, have shielded Israel from any responsibility for the Gaza massacre, while they have denied Iran inherent right to self-defense against the Israeli armed attack on our diplomatic premises. At the same time, they shamefully justified the Israeli massacre and genocide against the defenseless Palestinian people under the pretext of self-defense.
Addressing the Council, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres was emphatic in his call for de-escalation in the region. He says peace and security is being undermined by the hour.
It's time to step back from the brink. It's vital to avoid any action that could lead to major military confrontations on multiple fronts in the Middle East. Civilians are already bearing the brunt and paying the highest price. Regional and indeed global peace and security are being undermined by the hour. Neither the region nor the world can afford more war.
Washington's representative here in New York said it will in the coming days explore additional measures to hold Iran accountable, calling on the Council to unequivocally condemn Iran's actions. It maintains that the United States fully supports Israel's right to defend itself. China said this latest escalation emphasizes the need for enforcement of the UN resolutions demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Russia's ambassador blamed his Western colleagues for what he called hypocrisy and double standards. The Council is here to decide on what action it will take, but these latest developments will most likely remain on its agenda this week.
That was Jody Jacobs at the United Nations on an emergency Security Council meeting. In Africa, a year of war in Sudan has devastated the country and its citizens, with nearly 14,000 people killed and millions more displaced. Zhao Yang speaks exclusively to Farid Aiwa, the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Society's head of delegation in Sudan and Eritrea. He discussed the efforts to ensure the Sudan crisis is not overlooked by the international community and global media.
Multiple conflicts are taking place around the world right now, and Gaza is under the global spotlight. So, you know, we have just a sheer wealth of information available to us now, and people and media are calling, you know, war news fatigue. How can we keep the world's attention on Sudan and ensure that it does not become just another forgotten crisis?
I think this is a time for men with conscience to reflect and look at the challenges and humanitarian needs that are facing in Sudan. Similarly, they have to look at the humanitarian challenges that are faced in Gaza, in Europe. So there are times when a human being needs to sit down and reflect on the humanitarian consequences of man's action. Some of this can be avoided. Some of this can be mitigated. and some of this can be eliminated if man sits and talk and look at the humanitarian consequences of their action. It's not enough to just mobilize humanitarian services if the root cause of the problems are not addressed. You cannot have children being killed in war, women being killed, and looking at population that are now struggling and to meet basic needs. While if the situation and the environment was conducive, there would be no need to be talking about this issue today. So I think besides the humanitarian consequences of this war, we are also calling about to conscious of man, and especially the people that are able to look for all means possible to ensure that the root cause, which is the current fighting, is put to a stop. That the humanitarian suffering needs to start to be addressed, and you know this will just be the first step. And the next step is to get people to recover and go back to their normal way of life. So the call we are making as Red Cross, Red Crescent movement, is there needs to be a ceasefire, there needs to be peace, and there needs to be reconciliation, and that will be the best the first step into the longer journey of recovery.
That was Zhao Yang speaking to Farid Aiwa with the IFRC. The Ugandan government has urged almost 1,000 families living around Mount Elgon to leave the area immediately as heavy rains continue to pound the region. Each family has received about $3,000 as part of a resettlement package. The Mount Elgon region is prone to floods, which have displaced thousands of people over the years. Isabel Nakia reports from Kampala.
Authorities in Uganda have issued warnings about the situation around Mount Elgon to the hundreds of people still living on the slopes of the mountain, which is an extinct volcano. Environmental experts have identified four districts in eastern Uganda as high-risk areas and advised residents to vacate those places immediately.
Heed warnings if it is projected if we are projected to have excessive precipitation, rainfall, we need to ask ourselves, what do we need to do to ensure that if there is flooding, we actually can survive and minimize damage? So heed to warnings, and then perhaps we ask the Office of the Prime Minister, the Department of Disaster Preparedness, Disaster Management and Preparedness, to again emphasize more on the preparedness as opposed to the response.
The government has set aside land for those affected who are required to put up houses with the cash relief they've been given. But many are reluctant to move because the slopes of the mountain are fertile for agriculture.
Most people have cultivated, perhaps because of increasing population, cultivated on slopes that should actually be left maybe forested or grassland. Now when you cultivate a slope that is fragile, you make it prone. Now, a fragile slope receiving excessive precipitation, you're actually having the raw materials for landslides.
In 2021, the government asked more than 4,000 families to leave the area and gave them a cash assistance to aid their relocation. But reports surfaced that the financial support program had been abused by some officials. The disaster ministry says it's acting fast before another emergency occurs. Weather experts have projected that the Ugandan highlands will receive above normal rainfall this season. One of the worst landslides took place in 2018 when 42 people were killed and more than 500 displaced. The government plans to place the area under the National Forestry Authority once people living there are relocated.
That was Isabel Nakia reporting. Finally, turning to Asia, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz is in Shanghai, the second stop on his official visit to China. Shanghai and nearby cities have attracted considerable investment from German companies. Chen Tong takes a closer look at why German companies favour doing business in the Yangtze River Delta.
If we take a look at the delegation he's taking to China, it's not difficult to see the reason why Shanghai is the second stop. The heads of well-known German companies, including chemical giant Bosch, technology company Siemens, and car makers BMW, Mercedes-Benz, Volkswagen are accompanying the German leader to China. And almost all of them have set up their offices in Shanghai or operate factories in nearby cities. It's estimated there are over 5,000 German companies operating business in China, and a majority of them are located in the Yangtze River Delta region. For example, an hour drive from Shanghai, the city of Taicang is known as the German town in China. It's home to hundreds of German firms. And just in January, the 500th German firm was granted its operation license in Taicang. The mature supply chain, the favorable business environment are the two major factors attracting German companies to China. And of course, they are also seeking more business opportunities. A survey conducted by German Chamber of Commerce shows that over 90% of the surveyed German firms in China say they will remain in the country. And close to 80% of the firms say they are expected to see their industries grow in the next 5 years.
Now it's Chen Tong reporting from Shanghai. Recapping today's headlines. The international community is calling for restraint following Iran's retaliatory attacks on Israel. More than 14,000 dead and 8 million displaced. We look at the conflict in Sudan 1 year on. And German Chancellor Olaf Scholz is in Shanghai on the second stop of his China visit to boost trade cooperation. That's it for this edition of The Top Story, a podcast that brings you world headlines every weekday. For more news in politics, business, sports and culture, you can subscribe to The Beijing Hour, a one-hour podcast news magazine program. We welcome and appreciate all ratings and reviews. I'm Tian Lu. Thank you for listening.